I'm Anders Sandberg, and I'm a research fellow at the Future of Humanity Institute.
Anders, one of the things you're working on is mapping the brain. What is it to map the brain?
It's about finding out exactly what exists in the brain and make a database, essentially assembly instructions, you could say. So right now, we obviously got brain maps using scanners on a large scale, and people have been studying in microscope small parts of the brain. But what about mapping where every cell in the brain is, how every cell is connected to every other cell, and by what type of connection there is?
So that sounds like an enormous task. How many years are we away from being able to accomplish that?
The amazing thing is we might not be too many years away from getting a brain scan that shows every cell, all 100 billion of them. Because we already have technology to scan mouse brains in a few hours, producing a 2 terabyte data set that shows every cell. That's still a bit too rough resolution to see what everything is connected to. But there are some promising technologies that might be able to scale things up. So given the right kind of investment, it's likely that we could do this. Within 20 years, we could actually have a database of roughly everything in the brain.
And what's driving this research? Why would we want to have a complete mapping of the brain?
There are several reasons. The most obvious one is a scientific one. We actually want to understand the brain, figure out how it works, what's inside it. And then there are practical engineering reasons. The brain is good at pattern recognition. We might want to steal some of its secrets to use in robots to actually figure out how to make robots that can understand the world and interact with it just as well as the simplest animals are doing today. But then there is an even more interesting thing, and that is, of course, copying the brain. Imagine that you had a complete scan of a human brain, and then you ran a simulation of it. We are already doing small simulations with a few million neurons in computational neuroscience. But now you actually did a full simulation of all 100 billion neurons, all their thousands of synapses each, with all the chemistry going. According to some theories, that would actually produce the right kind of activity for a mind. It would actually produce thinking. Other theories of mind, of course, says, no, it's not going to work. So this is going to be a test a bit of some theories about the philosophy of mind.
So you've obviously got a very big brain. I can see the advantages of copying yours, but why would one want to copy brains generally?
Well, I think at least some people would say that's the way to get immortality. After all, you can take backup copies. Here, everybody immediately ends up in a big debate. Would a copy of my brain actually be me in an important sense? And people have very different philosophies about that. But some of us would say, yes, that would actually be me. But there are other interesting and somewhat unsettling possibilities. If I had my brain as software, it would be relatively easy to copy it and have two versions of my brain. And we could, of course, work in parallel. We could most likely do twice the amount of work. So once you start being able to copy brains, you get a lot of very interesting possibilities. Essentially, you get copyable human capital.
So if I was able to copy, for example, my accountant's brain or my lawyer's brain, I could then use the copy of that brain, and presumably I would only be charged a fraction of the fee, and take advantage of that brain to solve my legal or my accountancy problems.
Presumably, although if it was an exact copy of your lawyer's brain, he would of course negotiate a pretty hefty contract fee anyway. Otherwise, it wouldn't be an exact copy. So there are some very interesting ethical problems here, of course. I believe that actually a thinking being has moral rights, which means that even the software brains would actually have kind of human rights. You're not allowed to delete them willy-nilly, and you should pay them for their work. But still, you would get some enormous competition advantage if you exist as software. The amount of money it takes to grow up, to become a lawyer, and get an education is enormous. But if you can make a copy, now you get two lawyers for a price of one. So that's going to lead to an enormous economic change.
And so core to your research are the ethical dilemmas thrown up by the possibility of copying brains.
Yes, although you might say that the probability of it actually happening are relatively low, the impact, if it would happen, is so enormous that it actually makes sense to try to think about this a bit beforehand. If it turns out to happen in a short period of time, that's a very scary prospect. There are, of course, a lot of other interesting ethical issues just in developing the technology. After all, how do you recruit volunteers? Because the first brain scans are not going to be that good. We're going to be losing parts of the brains, and the simulation are not going to be that perfect. So I would certainly not want to be the guinea pig for this. But of course, even more interesting is the question, what do we do actually in a society where you can make backups, when you can copy yourself, and where human capital is enormously cheap and enormously available? We're probably going to be, as a whole, enormously rich, but we're also going to have trillions of people as software.
Anders Sandberg, thank you very much.
Thank you.